Network. Peter R. Breggin, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT, and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour.
Hello, 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 folks, my wonderful, wonderful audience. Once again, I have the honor of talking to all of you wonderful people, getting your emails, thinking about what more I can say to you and what I can tell you. And I really do mean it's a privilege. Life itself, of course, is something to be thankful for every day, but a privilege of getting on the air and talking and getting feedback is just an amazing, amazing thing to have. I wish more people on the air realized what an honor and a privilege it is and what a trust it is. And I feel the same way about psychotherapy, that it's a sacred trust and we should honor it as therapists and be as respectful and kind, thoughtful, caring as we can be. But the more I think about it, and today is the first time I've made all these connections at once, just talking to you, see what a privilege does. Our relationships, our personal relationships are the same. My relationship with the people I live with, Ginger and her mom and our three dogs, that's also a sacred trust. And if you approach life that way, that life is a sacred trust, everything will change for you. Everything. You'll be thinking about your gratitude for being alive, being able to poke your head out and see nature, being able to communicate in some way or another. And if you think of yourself as a source of love, and that you're going to be a source of love, and you're going to follow what is my most important prescription, I think it often is, that everything that comes out of your mouth should come out through the love channel, and it should advance your relationship the way I want to advance my relationship with my wonderful audience, the way I want to, after all these years, still advance my relationship with my wife. I find that people respond to this idea when I'm not in a therapy session, not on the air, but just if I'm chatting with them at a conference, most of them think, well, that's amazing to actually even set the standard that everything that comes out of your mouth enhances the relationship with the other person or doesn't get said. So that arguing is useless, being angry gets you nowhere. It's much better to say, I'm just, you know, upset and I don't want to say anything that won't advance this relationship. So can I share with you maybe how upset I am? Or could you tell me if you're upset with me? Maybe that would be a better approach. You know, you think it through in terms of what's loving and what will advance the relationship. And I've had clients, you know, where I can help them really do this, who have turned around marriages practically overnight. And then family life as they do the same with each of their kids and saying, I just want to have loving and respectful relationships where what we say to each other advances the relationship and advances our lives. Think about it. Write to me at BregginLive@Hotmail.com. BregginLive@Hotmail.com and tell me if it works. Tell me if it's worked for you. And by the way, this is January 30th and it's open mic, because it's the last Wednesday of the week. And if you are just tuning in on this from somewhere out in the world and don't know what to expect on the show, it's the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour. It's 4 p.m. every Wednesday, 4 to 5. We have callers every session, unless it's a replay. And today I'm not asking people to focus on the show, but to talk about whatever they're interested in. It's the open mic. And I really look forward. We already have callers coming in and lining up, and that's just marvelous. If you call soon, you will definitely get on this hour. And I'll try to let you know toward the end of the hour when we're not going to be taking any more callers. And you call in at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, and you're listening on PRN.FM. But to call in, it's 888-874-4888. And be a first-time caller, be a first-time listener, be whatever you like. I have no idea who you are because I can't see you and I can't trace you. And my website is Bregin.com, Bregin.com. I want to share with you some interesting things. One thing I'll keep you track of is today, before the show, I had my first session with a physical trainer. So here I am. I'm 82 years old, folks, and I'm going to do my first physical trainer. Now, I've learned a lot from supervisors at various times in my life. My wonderful Mrs. Kelty back in high school, who was the head of the newspaper, our high school newspaper, and I was eventually editor-in-chief. I learned from her kindness, patience, love. I learned to question my own drivenness. She was the first one that had asked me, why did I have to be that way? And she was of great help to me, and I had some really good teachers at Harvard who opened new ways of thinking for me. And then throughout medical school, my psychiatric training, there were a few kinds of folks that aren't even in psychiatric training programs anymore, but psychologically thinking people who helped me continue the journey on being kind and gentle and thoughtful and helping me move along with it. Benjamin Spock, perhaps the most famous doctor in the world at the time, he wrote all the baby books. He happened to be my individual tutorial mentor for 4 years at Case Western Reserve. We both got a pregnant lady assigned to us, and then we went through the birth, and we went through the pediatric period of time. And I remember Ben Spock. It was very humbling to stand next to Ben Spock. I'm 5'4", and I think Ben was at least 6'4". I'm kind of stocky, certainly, you know, maybe a little more sturdy looking than most people, and Ben was like a string bean. And I had to look up at him and then down at the baby, you know, that kind of thing. It sort of gave me perspective. And I remember Ben coming in and with some paint on his hands and looking at the patient, who was an African-American woman from a poverty-ridden area. That's where We tried to get our patients in who would not ordinarily get such good service as Ben Spock. Kind of blew her away when she went into the drugstore and saw all those books there at that time and years ago. And Ben apologized to her and explained that he had this paint on his hands and he couldn't get it off entirely. He had been painting his boat, he said, a sailboat. And he apologized and just guaranteed her that if he couldn't get the paint off, it wasn't going to affect her baby in any way. And it was just one more lesson in how to be when you have power and authority. You have to be kind, thoughtful, and put the other people that you're dealing with at their ease. And my trainer was just like that. And I think I'm going to have a long-term relationship with this wonderful woman. I think that I'm going to get healthier and healthier. It was the only main thing missing from my program, because I do a lot of spiritual work on myself, obviously, and I have been eating very well, as I've been telling many of you, on a vegetable, largely a plant-based diet. And I just came back from an amazing conference. It's still going on. It's a 10-day conference. It's free in Melrose, New York, Huntington. It's near Huntington, Long Island, in Melrose. And you can find it on my website. Go to Bregan.com and look down to the events that I'm at. I gave a couple of talks there. They must have been filmed by various visiting film companies, I think, three times. And just a wonderful response. Times are changing. People are noticing. This is good news. People are noticing that that drugs are hurting their friends and their family and themselves. And the response I get now at a conference, it's stunning. I mean, in the early years, folks, like in the 70s and the 80s, I would get yelled at, screamed at, and now I get hugs and kisses and thank yous for standing up for the truth and standing up for patients and supporting people who have been hurt and so on. And speaking about love, people are so happy to hear a psychiatrist say it's all about caring. It's all about mutual support, community, cooperation. It's strengthening ourselves as social beings. That is, and that doesn't rule out self-understanding. I'm big on self-understanding, but a lot of people aren't. They're happy to learn that they can leave behind pain and suffering by engaging other people in a loving way. So put down for next year, I hope I'm invited back, put down the Real Truth About Health conference for about roughly this time this year. I don't know if it's up already when it'll be next year. The Real Truth About Health conference, even if I'm not there, it's a good conference. Cross the spectrum of better health interventions from really, really good professors at universities to really good people who have no credentials but have gotten interested in something. Some people I wouldn't endorse what they're doing, and some people, many, many people, I think, are just doing marvelous, marvelous work. Let me respond to a couple of the questions and comments that have come in on Bregan Live. I have a dedicated email for my wonderful audience, BreganLive@Hotmail.com, BreganLive@Hotmail.com. And if I can successfully get back to my emails, which is never easy for me to negotiate everything while I'm on the air, I might address a couple of things, but I also have them in mind as we're talking. And one of the comments and questions, first of all, two people wrote in talking about how guilt, shame, and anxiety, my book, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, had changed their lives or their family members' lives. Now, somebody asked me about micronutrients, wrote in about micronutrients and nutrient therapy and so on. And I can say now, from co-sponsoring conferences on nutrition and mental health, from going to this conference and hearing people, that the consensus among scientific people, which doesn't always mean it's true, but the consensus among the scientists that I'm actually listening to, interacting with, being on panels with, is that there's no way to get around simply good eating. There just isn't. There are no great nutrients to take for your brain. It's a matter of making a healthy body. And you do that with a good spiritual state, a loving attitude toward life, letting go of violence and anger and resentment that we all struggle with all of our lives, letting it all go, and engaging life in a loving manner, whether you choose God or friends or people of that kind, a cab driver, not cab, but a limo driver that I talked with back and forth to the conference, talked about his Hindu religion, and he said, "Well, this is my own view of it," he said, and it was something to the effect of that God is everywhere, and God is all the people, and loving God is what we should do. Nutrients, specific nutrients, no one who is being scientifically oriented that I talk to thinks that they're the answer. The answer is quite simple. As much as possible, go to the continuum of eating that consists of plant-based foods and low-fat foods and no dairy. So we're not eating cheese, we're not eating dairy. We're cutting back some, even on plant foods that are fattening, like nuts. Don't overdo it. Fat is inflammatory. Fat holds things in place in our bodies that we really shouldn't be hanging on to. Eat as much rice and eat as much whole grain and eat as much potatoes and things like that as you can. Find what you want. It isn't a matter of being so balanced as of just eating. If you eat a lot of vegetables and plants, you're going to do good. And the studies show, and drink lots of water. I have trouble doing that. Drink lots of water. And avoid psychoactive substances. That's a part of this whole plan that we are teaching people. Now, it doesn't mean you have to be vegetarian. Don't grimace and turn off the radio show. You do not have to be a vegetarian. But the science shows the more you eat plants and the less you eat animals of any kind, including salmon, which I love, any kind of animal, the shorter your life and the more of the civilized diseases you'll get and die of, like cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and so on. And also, the more you'll have these gastric problems, terrible ones like ulcerative colitis. And I want to remind folks that who haven't heard me before that I went on plant-based 2 years ago at the suggestion of Pam Popper, whose conferences she had invited me to, who's a nutritionist, and now we do them together, and we do courses together. And you just check my radio show, go to Bregan.com and look down the side of the list of things, and you see the radio show, and you can just go into that and look up Pam Popper and listen to her shows with me. Two of her shows are near the top in viewers long term, going there and watching her, and you'll just get all this information. So you don't have to. There's no study that shows that pure veganism is the best, because we don't have large cultural studies like that, because all societies throughout time seem to have eaten meat where they can get their hands on it, at least some meat. So the science behind pure veganism is simply a relative projection of what we see in cultural studies, which is the more you move in that direction, the healthier you are. And the only supplement you might need is B12. Because believe it or not, B12, we can't make. Animals make it. It's in animal flesh. And we got our B12 during evolution by dead animals and feces in the streams and in the earth and in the dirt. So that's how we got our B12. So if you're getting close to giving up eating animals, then that's the one supplement you need is B12. So you don't need all this other stuff. I've spent, probably thousands of dollars over the years pursuing one or another vitamin or mineral. And there's not much evidence for it. And even the AMA happens to agree about all that, which is kind of strange. It's unusual. But the AMA guidelines, they're not pushing vitamin C, things like that. And there's even questions about vitamin D when it's low, whether that's a sign of illness rather than the cause of the illness. Basically, I'm giving back to you what I hear from experts I get to meet in nutrition, talk to firsthand, ask them questions, listen to them, and reading Pam Popper and reading the China study and stuff like that. The let me go in a minute to my callers, and we have a few, and I'll take Diane in Canada about reducing medication. She was the first to call in. Hi, Diane.
Hello, Dr. Bragan. Thank you for taking my call. It's a pleasure to talk with you. My question is regarding my son. I phoned probably 2-3 months ago and had mentioned to you that he's reducing his medication. He has reduced Invega from 9 milligrams to 3, and he's reduced his apodivoprox from 1,000 to 850. And he is doing very, very well. We have switched, at the time he started to reduce them, we switched to a plant-based diet. We eat less, but we have more energy. He has lost 30 pounds. I have I've lost.
You know, that's about what I lost. Go ahead. And Ginger, go ahead.
30 pounds he's lost from 315 to, he's down to 285, somewhere in that. He's fluctuating. He's working out every day. The cardio he had to reduce. He does take B12. He takes omega-3. And basically, he feels so much better. And the difference with reducing the medication this time from last time, there's no side effects. Like, it's been wonderful.
Oh, my God. What a beautiful follow-up. A phone call. Just tell me more.
Well, he's afraid to reduce it any further because he doesn't want to go into a relapse. He doesn't want anything bad to happen. But I'm trying to convince him through love and encouragement, as always. I'm the Canadian who handed out your books in a hospital and got kicked out 3 times. But I handed out a lot of books. And I have 2 people that phoned me back and said, thank you. I never knew this man existed. I love his books. And I did refer them, but I'm convinced that he could reduce it even further, and he has more energy. He's feeling better. He's studying more. He's working out every day. It's all positive.
Do you have any estimate about what is the... maybe helping him the most, the diet? What does he think? The diet, the reduction of medication?
Well, he's hoping to lose, hopefully, another 50 pounds. But as I had said to him, it will take time. And it does seem to be taking time. But he'd like to reduce them, but he's afraid to. Because it's been going so well, he's almost scared. And, of course, the Canadian Psychiatric Association here, every single doctor tells them, you have to be on pills every day. They wanted to increase them instead of decrease them. And he says, gee, I've decreased this, and everything they said was wrong. I feel great.
So, you know, it's so interesting that we have a profession. By the way, do I sound clear to you, Diane?
Oh, yes, very much so.
Oh,
do I to you?
Oh, you're terrific. I was just wondering because all of a sudden on my machine, my voice just didn't seem quite as present. So I'm sure if it's on the phone clear, you're getting it, you know, on the air. On the phone,
correct.
Really. But I've been sounding good on the air. That's
excellent.
Good. Yeah. So first of all, I mean, think about a profession that only knows how to increase drugs. Imagine if you know, they always want to say it's like insulin for diabetes. Suppose all you knew how to do was raise insulin.
Yeah.
Suppose you were that kind of doctor, like a psychiatrist, and all you did was raise insulin. Be killing people left and right. And in fact, psychiatry kills a large, large numbers of people. So, and long run, too, because all of the all the drugs that are called antipsychotics tend to produce some aspect of a metabolic syndrome involving, you know, cardiac problems, cholesterol problems, sugar problems, obesity, and stuff like that. And long term, that's very bad for longevity and health. I I think you should be very respectful of what your son feels and about his concerns, and don't push him to the extent that he is not making the choices. I think one of the things I've learned in taking people off meds is you, unless you're in a serious emergency where you might need a hospital, you don't push somebody past their wishes. You, if anything, you're better off slowing them down usually, because if they have a bad experience, they'll feel, well, it was taken away from them and look what happened, and they can't trust you to protect them. And if you do decide to cut further back, which is always a good idea, in my opinion, I think if someone can get off all the drugs, they're going to have a longer, healthier mental and physical life. I would suggest that you figure out a way to do it and talk with your son about it in the tiniest way. Now, I don't want to give medical advice on the air. You could check with your pharmacist about, you know, whether you could break up one of these drugs and let your son cut off the tiniest amount.
Well, we did, and he sold us a pill splitter, and he said, do half at a time. And he said, if you're cautious, do a third at a time.
Even. Well, that's right. Do a smidgen at a time as you get lower. And a smidgen, of course, is indefinable, I do believe. But do something that's going to make him comfortable. So you might just go back to him and say, well, would you be happy if we just did a, you know, just shaved a little off a bit? Mm-hmm. And see, because he's been on for a while, right? A long time?
Yes,
I don't remember, but it sounds like a long time to gain all that weight.
Yes, it's about a year and a half.
Well, that's not a hugely long time. I mean, he really reacted to the drugs. But you know, talk to him about taking a smidgen off.
Well, he sees cut the fast food. I threw out all my wheat. I don't eat any wheat, and neither does it my family. After reading Dr. William Davis's book on wheat,
yeah.
I feel 10 times better from not having wheat. I'm a fairly good cook. I make homemade bread from almond flour.
And yes, I drink almond milk.
And almond milk and plant-based. And it's actually easier to cook with plant-based.
Yeah.
Very minimum meat, like yourself. I love
and it can be very cheap, folks. Pam Popper showed that you could eat on food stamps with ease because you're starting with potatoes, rice, whole grains, things like that. But let me comment on the idea of cutting out all wheat. Most of the nutritionists say that this is unless you're really allergic to it and it shows up on blood tests or some way, that some people can handle wheat and some people can't. Some people can handle gluten and some people get very, very sick from it.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to stay gluten-free because I used to get stomach aches from it. I don't know if I still will. But it isn't a prescription for all patients, all people to get off wheat. Maybe the doctor does, whom you read. But certainly the people I'm seeing say, you know, well, do you have problems with it? That's the big question.
Yes.
Unless you have something like, you know, ulcerative colitis, and you then in the beginning the recommendation would be from Pam would be, for example, to go gluten-free in the beginning. But I'm glad he's doing so well. And, you know, maybe someday when he's feeling good about it, he might join you on the show, calling in. I mean, is that something he might want to do?
Yes, I think so, especially after I tell him how you had a appointment at 82 with a personal trainer. I mean, congratulations. I mean, that is just wonderful. I really commend you for doing that. That's fantastic.
Well, let me tell you, folks, so it's so important that you not hero worship people as somehow above or better than you. When I got ready to go to the trainer, Ginger wasn't home. She was out enjoying herself. I'd really encouraged her to go out and enjoy herself. She hasn't been doing that a lot lately. And I became like a kindergartner going to the trainer. I couldn't find my stuff. I went looking for the the pass to the to the place where we do the training, and of course it was on my car keys, and I didn't pick them up yet, and I couldn't find my sneakers. And I literally, when I got there, she looked at me, and I was all a twitter, and she said, "Were you afraid of meeting me?" I said, "No, I'm just feeling, in fact, I know so many good things about you." I said, "But for some reason, I feel like I'm a kid going to kindergarten, and I couldn't get my act together on the way." And that's because it meant so much to me. I have avoided what I know I needed for so long. I tried exercising. I belonged to clubs. I'll bet if I asked how many in my audience, and we were in a huge hall, you'd, a lot of you raise your hands. Because you've tried and failed at doing this. So let me be an inspiration to go ahead and try. And now that I've told you I've done it, I mean, you know, and you don't hear from me again about it, you email me. "Hey, Peter, are you going or not? We haven't heard from you about it." So you can be my team if I don't do anything with it. So thank you for that encouragement, Diane. And I'm going to let you go if it's okay with you right now, all right?
Thank you very much, Dr. Brady.
Okay. We'll go in order to Regina in Florida, who wanted some relationship advice.
Hello, Dr. Brady. How are you?
I'm doing really, 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 really good. I'm doing better than usual. I had such a great conference. I told folks about it. So tell me what you're calling about.
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you so much and God bless you, because my brother and my mother found your book, and I've been on psychiatric pills for 10 years, and I always knew they never made me feel good, and I knew it was kind of all a jig. So now I'm withdrawing, and, you know, God bless, it's been totally great, you know, with very little suffering. And like 2 years ago, they released me out of the hospital on 9 pills. And now I'm
oh, my Lord.
Two.
9 different pills.
Yeah.
I mean, they made an experiment out of you, a big, colossal experiment. They have no idea how 9 psychoactive pills.
For the past 10 years, I just got my hospital records, and they're 170 pages.
Oh,
anyway.
Boy. I am so glad, Gina, that you are doing well. Have you been going slow, taking your time?
Oh, well, I read your book in 3 days because I was so compelled.
Which book did you read? I have a lot of them.
Withdrawing from psychiatric.
Yeah, psychiatric drug withdrawal.
Yeah, so I read that, and I've been going as slow as I possibly can. Like, I've been doing, like, 15%, like, every 15 to 16 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm actually, sometimes I forget I'm withdrawing because I go to school, I
work.
Well,
that's good.
And I'm 31, though, and, you know, I'm trying to, I live with my mom and brother, and I'm trying to, you know, kind of start my life. And every time I go to maybe start a new relationship, which I'm like, you know, oh, I'm withdrawing, don't start a relationship. But I get lonely, and, you know, I'm not 19 anymore, I'm getting older. And every time I go to start a new relationship, I get really insecure. And, like, I know I'm on the money and everything, and the right people understand I have to take medicine every night. And, but, you know, I just, in the course of getting to know somebody, I feel really awkward, and I don't know if my emotions are too much or too little. I don't know if dating is the right thing. And I know it sounds trivial compared to everyone else's problems, but, you know.
Oh, Gina, that is not true. Relationship problems are the greatest, probably, difficulty presented to human beings. No. Don't trivialize the difficulty you're having surrounding relationship. It's harder for most people to face the loss of relationship than it is to face life-threatening diseases. I've seen that again and again. So respect yourself in this struggle to find relationship.
Because it's like I have no self-worth, because I feel like my brain is like I'm on the money for school and work and everything. And, like, my mom tells me my emotions are on point. Like, she forgets I'm withdrawing too sometimes. So like,
this is good news. So why don't you talk briefly about how you're on point at work and learning and with your mom and your family. Just tell the world how well you're doing so that it becomes more real to you.
You know, a lot of the time I have to just overcome it. Like the only time, like, you know, I stayed home for 2 years completely over-medicated.
So you've come very, very far.
Yeah, and like, you know, I'm kind of like a little perfectionist too. So it's long story short, I've come from drooling on the couch, being 180 pounds, to eating healthy again and working out. And like the only time I feel withdrawal symptoms is at night, like when I'm in my bed and my body's stiff and uncomfortable. Yeah. And sometimes
that's typical, by the way, Gina. All these kinds of things bother us more at night, pretty much.
Really?
That's common. We're more vulnerable at night. We're more tired at night. Our hormonal balances are shifting. We're just not as prepared to deal with a lot of things as we go to sleep at night. But that's very, very common. So I'm having a little trouble getting you to be proud of yourself. So I want you to think about some of what you've told us. You were being destroyed by psychiatry, and you have begun to liberate yourself. You have lost a lot of weight. You have cut back on your medicines. You're no longer lying around, as you put it, drooling. And folks, that's no exaggeration. That happens to millions of people suffering from that right now. So, and you have now you're working for the first time in a while?
Well, when I got out of the hospital 2 years ago, I stayed home for a whole year because I was in La La Land. I couldn't even, you know, think straight. And now,
did you get a job? Yeah, go ahead.
Yep, I'm working part-time, and I'm going to school part-time. And, you know, like, I am a very strong person, and I've overcome a lot.
Let me slow you down. So you're working part-time. You're going to school part-time. You're cutting down on your medications. You're no longer sitting around and being all caved in and intoxicated by the drugs. And how is your relationship with your mother?
Oh, they're my mom and brother are my biggest supporters, you know.
That's unusual. So that's something to be very pleased and proud about.
Well, yeah, I have so much to be grateful for, you know. It's just
grateful and proud. I want you to be able to meet some guy or girl. You're looking for a boy, a man?
A guy.
Yeah, okay, so you're looking for a guy. I want you to be able to, when you're meeting a guy, to say to yourself, well, if we get along at some point, he's going to hear these really good things about me. That I've overcome real issues. I've accomplished this and going to school. I'm working, and I live at home, but I have good relationships with my family. I want you to begin to feel proud, because if you decide that you want to be loving, Gina, let me tell you this: if you decide you want to be loving, you will find somebody. Because people who are loving are needed in this world and treasured and find other people. So that's the missing component right now, might be whether you're ready to love. When you get ready to love, there's going to be somebody. In my experience, within a year, there's somebody that's really worth considering. So that might be the part you want to work on.
I just don't feel like I'm equal to anybody because I'm, you know, in withdrawal mode, and I don't know if my emotions are on the money, and that's really all it is.
Probably not the best time to make a relationship, but in fact, I mean, one of my patients who you know, was told that they came out of a hospital. They were told they had to stay on drugs for 2 or 3 years and on and on. And during our weaning off, he actually met a wonderful girl. I wouldn't have advised it. Everybody got nervous, but worked out really fine. So there's no formula that tells you, you know, whether you're ready or not to reach out. And I think one of the main things is to know that what people really want, that is the kind of people you would be happy with, they want a loving relationship. Yeah. And that's what they mainly want. Sorry. Excuse me?
The only thing is, I have no problem being single and alone, but this withdrawing is taking years. Like, you know, it's going to take like 3 or 4 years maybe. And I'm like, do I stay alone? Do I venture out? You know?
I think that you should forget about judging it by how long you estimate your withdrawal to be, and judge it by your desires and your needs and how you feel you're doing. And if your mother and your family are very good support, you talk it over with them. Do they think you're ready? Don't say to yourself, well, I'm in withdrawal, I can't do this or that. You know, so check it out with your great support group.
Thank you so much. You've saved my life, Dr. Bracken.
Thank you for that love, Gina. Thank you. And
thank you.
You're welcome. Are you still there, or did you say goodbye? I think Gina has said goodbye.
No, I said.
Oh no, there you are.
So much. Yeah. Okay. I want you to talk to someone else. I don't want to be selfish with my time.
No,
thank
you're
you
not
so
being
much.
Selfish. But I'm going to go to my next guest because I think I can get in Marty, and I think I can get in Thomas.
Yeah, go. I'm sorry.
Okay, and I'm not sure about anybody else, folks. So
you
might not call in. Bye-bye now, Gina. Bye, dear. Bye. Okay, Marty, hi.
Hi, Peter. It's good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, sir. You're in North Carolina?
Yeah, I'm a retired psychologist down there. You actually helped me out with that blurb for Bert Caron's book.
I remember. This is one of the great things about doing a show. Have we ever met?
You know, we did years and years ago at an ISPS conference.
Uh-huh.
I think it was that. And Bert said you were there, and I had picked up one of your books. I can't remember. Probably Toxic Psychiatry. And I came down, and you autographed for me. And, you know, I've always appreciated your work and what you do for the field. People like you make the work that I do and so many others so much easier to do because of what you
say. So tell everybody about the book. Before you do that, I want to make something so clear to people. If any of my guests are invited or planned, I will tell you. These two wonderful callers before Marty were not requested. They were not lined up. I just made a general request for the first caller to call back someday. So when you hear these testimonials, they're not set up. They're not planned. None of the calls today that I know were coming. And if I get a call from somebody who's a friend and I expected to call, I'll always let you know what's going on. So I'm as like, whoa, that's really a wonderful call, as you might be listening to it. And I want you to know this is all genuine. There's nothing set up at all. And I know if I were listening to those first two calls, I'd think, did he line those up or something? No, not even a hint of it. They're spontaneous. So Marty has a new book out, which are the papers of Bert Caron, the wonderful psychologist who wrote Psychotherapy for Schizophrenia. And I think the subtitle was, you know, This is the Best Approach or something. It's the best.
The treatment of choice.
So, Marty, welcome aboard. And there was something in the note that you want to talk about anger and aggression, but I'm happy to talk with you about anything.
Yeah, it's clear we could go on and on. But, you know, you talked initially in your show about coming from love, which is always the best place to come from when you can. And my work for years in the state hospital and then the prison system tells me a lot of people, and not just in those settings, struggle with that. And it's because they're so filled with anger. And what I discovered over the years is that so many people, and not just in prison, but even in my private practice as well, so many people equate anger with aggression. And they've never had the experience of just telling somebody they're angry. And, you know, simply explaining to somebody early in treatment that you can be angry and it doesn't have to hurt anybody. You can simply look somebody in the eye and say, I'm really angry at you because blah, blah, blah. And people, I mean, I've worked with murderers and people that have done assaults and rapes and all sorts of things, and when they realize that it's okay to be angry, and you need to be when that's how you feel, but it doesn't have to involve any kind of behavior. It can just be a simple expression of an emotion. And once people get it that it's okay to be angry, it really frees them up. They feel better emotionally and physically, and physical ailments start to fall by the wayside as you let go of this toxic emotion.
It's really, really true. I mean, when I used to be an angry young man, I had stomach aches all the time. Other people get headaches. I mean, people get all kinds of things from being chronically angry. And I had been dating a woman who was a regular participant in AA, and I went to some AA meetings with her to keep her company. And at one point, when I got when I was just getting angry again about something, and I had so much to be angry about, you know, after all, I'm a reformer. I'm seeing people hurting people all the time. I mean, who's not going to get angry at these? Pharmaceutical industry, American Psychiatric Association, the doctors that I'm an expert against, you know, who are lobotomizing, drugging, shocking people. But I realized that if I went from anger and kept on doing it, it was going to corrupt my whole being. And I gave it up to God. I said, God, if there's folks who need anger directed, and would you do it, please? Because I can't handle it. And that was the beginning. It was not overnight, but it was the beginning of a theme for me of giving up anger. And, you know, your calling in about it is incredibly important. I'd like to talk more about anger. Marty, would you call back anytime you want, but especially next month for when I do my open mics, the last Wednesday of the month, whatever it is. But let's see if you agree with this, that under anger is always hurt, and particularly
absolutely.
Shame. And the other thing, so what I emphasize for people is what you've said, and then if I get a chance, I say, but it really indicates hurt. And generally speaking, if you tell somebody you're hurt, you're feeling hurt or threatened, it has a much, much better effect than handling that same feeling by telling them you're angry, which may scare them. And of course, a lot of people, and I know you know this, but a lot of people, when they were young, they couldn't express anger without getting very badly hurt by their parents, their big brother, the bullies in school, the gangs. So to express anger was extremely dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're in a prison and a mental hospital, if you express anger, you could be in deep trouble with the powers that be.
Absolutely.
So, you know, so it's a complicated, complex thing. I really am glad. Why don't you hang on, Marty, and let me go to the final caller, because it's really a courtesy to get everybody in that has called up to a certain period of time, okay? Hang on, and we can take another caller at the same time. Thomas?
Yes. Yes, Dr. Bregan, this is Thomas. Hello? Hello?
I'm still hearing you.
Okay, now I hear you, Dr. Bregan.
Okay, I'm hearing you. So, hi. I hope you weren't calling to ask for a treatment withdrawal center, because I don't know where to send you. Is that what you're on Long Island? Are you there?
Yes, I'm on Long Island, and I did go to the Real Truth About Health conference. I saw your presentation. It was amazing. It was a wonderful experience and such a great conference. I'm actually going back tomorrow again, I got to see Dr. Popper, her presentation.
You got to see Pam. Oh, God, she's amazing, isn't she?
It was wonderful. I was so excited. I actually got there. I actually went there 2 days, and I guess it was her first presentation, and she was outside in the hallway there getting ready, and I recognized her, of course, and so I kind of got in on a little conversation with her and told her I was a member of her Wellness Forum Health, and it was just really special. So, yeah, my question, I was going to ask Dr. Popper after her presentation. Do you ever envision a time where there might be some kind of residential programs in place where people could go to help withdraw per your methodology? And
well, there are a lot of, I think, probably reasonably good withdrawal treatment centers. I've noticed if people Google almost any large city, there'll be a few that sound very welcoming and offer a huge variety of things. And you could just call one of those and say, if I come off my drugs, are you going to try to put me on new ones? And test their response, how long they say before they answer you and stuff. And, of course, there are plenty of treatment centers for coming off of benzodiazepines because they're accepted as being addictive, and also from stimulants, they're accepted as being addictive. You just have to make sure they're not going to push you onto something else. But, you know, you can get on the phone and call and ask. Now, what is there right now that would help you come off psychiatric drugs? I mean, I know one or two good in general withdrawal treatment centers, but they wouldn't be happy if I sent them many people on psych drugs because they're so much harder to come off than heroin and alcohol. I mean, that's the terrible truth. So we need people to start building these kinds of centers. My friend Peter Getze, who's been on the show, a G-O-T-S-C-H-Z-E, I guess something, probably botching it right now. But Peter Getze, he's got the book Deadly Psychiatry and Deadly Psychiatry and Denial or something like that, but Deadly Psychiatry. And he's developing centers in Europe, and I'm hoping that that's going to spin off, and we will have some here at some point, but not right now. I'm so glad, again, folks, I don't know Thomas. I didn't ask him to call in, didn't invite anybody to call in when I was at the center, when I was at the program. But you can go there still. The conference is open for a while, folks. You can go to the Real Truth About Health conference, and it's at the Hilton Huntington on Long Island. The Hilton Huntington near Melrose, Long Island. And it's free, and you might even get a free meal if you come at the right time.
Yes, Dr. Bregan, it's actually Melville.
Melville. Thank you.
Right,
thank you.
In the intro,
it is.
Yes.
Melville. Oh, gosh. It's Melville. No. did you like the conference? Did you recommend people go next year?
I didn't know if they were having it next year again, but it was tremendous. And
I think it's annual.
Okay. And the location
and it's
for
free.
Me was great. Yeah. Oh, it was so wonderful. You just walk in the door and you don't have to really do too much.
Yeah, I asked them when I got there. I said, "Where's the sign-up table?" After I'm a visiting speaker. I said, "There's no sign-up table. You walk in."
Yeah,
it was really cool. It was and it's got a wide variety things I don't believe in and things that I think of really great science. There's a wide variety of stuff. Anybody listening to this show is going to be able to pick and choose sensibly about what they want to do. Marty, are you still there? Marty, are you still there? I was going to invite Marty in the conversation. I guess three is gone, number three. Okay.
I'm still here.
Oh, you're there. Yeah, you're there.
I'm still here.
Marty, you ought to come to this conference next year. And then maybe you could come and talk, too. Marty and I were talking about anger. I don't know if you heard that part of the show, Thomas.
Yes. I did, actually.
Yeah, I think that anger is one of the great enemies of love, because when we love each other, anger is very destructive. And men don't realize when they get angry at women how terrifying it can be, because of the experience of men being bigger and men being able to hit. And there are very few women who are a match for a man, blow for blow, or they'd be fighting with, you know, in the men's groupings in sports and fighting and so on. And right. So when a man gets angry, it has a physically overwhelming threat to it, even if there's no chance you're going to do that. And women, maybe even less, realize that when they get angry at a man, it can present them with that awful threat of their mother being angry and the awful threat of losing love and guilt. So the more we can realize that being very angry, not saying I'm angry, but even saying, you know, Marty, I think even saying it can be a problem. What do you think? Am I exaggerating?
Well, it depends on who's listening to it. You know, some people can hear that, and other people, it triggers all their worst fears. You know, mom's going to leave me, I'm going to be abused. So, yeah, you know, you can't just run around and assume that you can just say, I'm angry with you to just anybody, and it's going to go well. But I think certainly in the guys that I work with in the prison system, learning that anger itself is just an emotion and has nothing to do with
violence. That it's normal. That's absolutely. It's a signal. It's a, you know, I view anger as I'm hurt. If I'm getting angry underneath, I'm usually feeling unloved, humiliated, endangered. And if I were to get very angry at Ginger, for example, it would upset her hugely. And underneath it, to get angry at Ginger, I would have to be feeling, oh, very threatened in some way, that she didn't understand me, or oh my God, she's going to, you know, turn out to be like somebody else or something. You know, it's hard to ever get so above things, folks. I really always want to say that to you. And I think that's part of what Marty is saying. Anger, we all struggle with anger. We all do. Hey, it's coming to an end. Marty and Thomas and my earlier callers, thanks so much. I think this has been a wonderful show, wonderful callers, wonderful audience. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. Bye-bye now, and have a great week, folks.